We're up, we're down, we're up, we're down. No, Johnny's not been back to the races. It's the Tyler SM Podcast, episode 31, where Reading Football Club continue to have their fans up and down more often than a yo-yo. This week, it's two wins from two games as Nigel Atkinside move to within four wins of a return to the Premier League. My name is Dan Wimbush. I am the host here at the Tyler SM Podcast and editor at thetylersm.com. And I am joined, as always, by Mr. Johnny Williams.
I'm disappointed that you refer to my gambling habits as up and down, although they are. I can't say they're always. They're more down than up, but yes. Gamble responsibly, gamble
indeed,
aware.
Gamble aware.
All that. We say that a shocking amount on this podcast, I think.
We do.
But anyway.
Exactly.
On the pitch.
There is a voice missing before we move on the pitch. Mr. Alan West can't join us. He's a late injury scratch. He's injured himself in the warm-up and can't take his place on the podcast this week.
He can't take the tension, the pain.
I don't think I could either.
He's bottled it.
No, in all seriousness, my dad, bless him, in all seriousness, had a heart attack last year. And I've said to him, you've got to stop listening to Reading games. It's not good for your health.
Mm.
And it isn't. Even me. And I'm, 27? And I felt it. I thought, better have something on speed dial. Because the way it's been up and down. And it's funny because we sat here last week, the three of us, just before the Monday, the Easter Monday games took place, didn't we? Me and Westy. And we sat down here, and it's safe to say we pretty much tore into Reading for 80 minutes.
We slated them. Absolutely destroyed them. Yeah.
And if you think of the circumstances we came into that show, obviously Reading had lost heavily at Bournemouth and Wigan. They'd picked up a draw against Leicester without playing brilliantly. And the other teams all had a game in hand. So it was very much looking like we're the outsiders. And I'm going to stand by what we said, because I think everything we said last week was I think fair and well considered, even if it might have sounded a little mean at times. I can't apologise for that. That's the way we see it. But now we're sitting here literally 8 days later, and how different is the playoff picture with Reading having won two games out of the last two, other results going their way for us even as we recorded that podcast.
Yeah.
And now we sit here, we'll face Burnley on Saturday afternoon, and if we win, we're in the playoffs. Not just that, we could conceivably finish fifth in the Championship. If I'd said that scenario to you as we sat here last week, I think you would have laughed.
I would have heavily laughed, because it's just been a queue of teams in 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th saying to Reading, I'm sure saying to other fans, because other fans probably feel the same, no one wants this 6th place. And even Wigan are starting to sort of say, actually, you know, we're happy with an FA Cup semi-final. That'll be our season done. You guys, go on. You deserve the opportunity. Because it's just absolutely crazy what's happened this season.
Everybody wants in on the race for 7th, Johnny.
It's great. You look at the Premier League and how last week Liverpool had it all sewn up. Jose Mourinho has been saying, oh, Chelsea, we've got no chance. And now,
really great accent you've done there, Johnny.
Thank you very much. I went to Portugal a couple of years ago. Can you tell I picked it up? And now Man City are favourites, and I'm sure at some point Chelsea will be favourites, Liverpool will be favourites, and we're probably going to get another Aguero moment in the last minute on the last day. That's just the way it happens. And for us to go into the last game being in control of our own destiny when, let's be honest, for a good portion of this season, we haven't looked in control of any matches, let alone our own destiny. It's just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
Indeed. And as I said, it's all turned around basically from two games. And let's go back then and cast our eyes back to that Tuesday. Obviously, as we recorded on the Monday, you know, we were relaying the scores they were going in. And as it went into that game against Middlesbrough on Tuesday, Reading knew that if they won that game, suddenly the playoff destiny was back in their own hands. And credit to them, because they came out of the blocks, probably the best they have in a long while, got an early 2-0 lead. Mm. And while they maybe didn't push on as much as some of us would have liked, with a patched up injured side, they got the job done. They picked up that 2-0 win. And it was just such a relief. And you could tell the relief in the stadium and on the pitch from the players. They'd finally got that monkey off their back, that they'd got that home win at long last.
So many monkeys off the back, getting a clean sheet at home, beating a side at home, which we hadn't done since the end of January when we had that amazing run. Scoring a goal from open play. I mean, Adam Lafondra may have scored from about 6 inches out, but
it all counts.
Technically, still open play. I mean, you know, the second one was
great free kick from Jordan Abita.
Jordan Abita and an own goal, so that one doesn't quite count to an open play. But, you know, there were so many sort of There was so much tension around the stadium, and for us to start as well as we did on the front foot, I mean, you've got to say, in fairness, Middlesbrough, mid-table side, they travelling down from the northeast on a Tuesday night, probably not the best scenario for them to come into it, but Reading were professional, Reading got the job done, and, you know, at the end of it, a 2-0 win, probably fair enough. Middlesbrough didn't really create too much. I mean, McCarthy didn't really have to save a shot on target, which I think was credit to the defence as well as the keeper and as well as the whole team. But no, it was a professional quality performance from Reading, and something that we haven't seen in a good few months at the moment.
Absolutely not. Although there was one scary moment with Danny Graham threw on goal, and for a £5 million striker, that was a woeful effort high and wide.
You can sort of see why. I think was he at Swansea, and then he went on loan to
Sunderland.
He went on loan to Sunderland. He scored his first Sunderland goal against Swansea, and it was sort of, you didn't score.
It's not worked out from there, has it?
No, and you know, I mean, you can see he was getting quite frustrated as well, because obviously he sort of thinks he's at a better level, or you know, he wants to sort of prove himself. He's probably, you know, that typical sort of striker who knows that the chances are coming and he's almost trying too hard. It's a bit of a cliche, and some people say it simply doesn't matter. But going back to basics, you know, that's almost what Reading did on Tuesday night. Going back to basics, wing play, pace and attacking, and you know, basically not allowing Middlesbrough any time on the ball. It let up a little bit in the second half, which was a far less lively affair, but I think by then it was all over, and Reading almost, you know, they were playing with a swagger which we haven't seen from them for a couple of months.
How much did you think the team changes going into that game made an impact? Because we sat here last week and we were debating, saying, oh, should they sweep the decks? And we were saying, well, what have they got to sweep the decks with? And, you know, two players that came up in that conversation quite heavily under, have they really filled their potential this season? Adam Lafondre and Hal Robson-Kanu, both of them got the start.
Mm.
And certainly in Lafondre's case, obviously he delivered with the goal. Hal Robson-Kanu, not quite as lucky. Horrible facial injury that forced him off after about 20 minutes and got Pavel Pogrebniak back on the pitch, which looks like it might have paid dividends in the Doncaster game. But I thought he did okay. I thought he looked full of energy. Lafondre, obviously, you know, I'm pleased he got the goal, and obviously he got a goal against Donny as well. I'll stick by what I've said all season. I don't think he offered much more than that. The ball didn't stick to him or anything. I don't think he created very much. But
well, he had a couple of headers. One went straight at the keeper and one hit the bar. And I mean, I sort of said in my match report, that's a little bit unusual for Lafondre, being a sort of 5-foot-8 striker, and we know him as a poacher, a one-touch finisher. For him to get a couple of chances with his head, credit to him for creating those chances. But he was in the right place for the goal. Exactly what you'd expect from a poacher, and credit to Jordan Ibiza, because for that goal, I thought Makhanov, while you could see that the 1-2 and the overlap was on, Makhanov did somewhat overplay that little through ball, and Ibiza had to go full pelt to get it. And then obviously McCleary nods it down, and Lafondre bundles it in.
A rare McCleary header.
Indeed. You know, challenging the keeper as well. 99 times out of 100, you'd say that the keeper would get that. But it was credit to Lafondre, because, you know, we've criticised him on here, and people have criticised him saying he doesn't get the service, or when he does get the service, he doesn't produce it. But he's a goal scorer, and you know, that's exactly what he did.
It's an interesting stat for you that I looked up today. There was a thread on Hobnob on Pav, but I looked it up, and Adam Lafondre is averaging 1.4 shots per game. And so for him to still be in double figures, okay, I know a few of them are in penalties, but for him to be leading, you know, the top scorer, and what's he got, 13, 14 goals this year, on that ratio of shots is brilliant. And Pav's not much better. I think Pav's was 1.8 shots a game. And for a bit of context, I think McCormack was about 3.3, and I think Vogues was about 2.7, and Ings was above 3 as well. So that's why they've got 25 goals. But for our strikers to, you know, be pushing on for 2 for them to be pushing on 15 with that few chances. And as a team, Reading are 20th out of 24 championship sides in number of shots per game. They're, you know, fifth from bottom in the championship table, and yet we're fifth in the table.
But I think that tells you something about, you know, the quality of chances. I mean, typically, you know, we've compared Brendan Rodgers and Nigel Adkins' side in a similar sort, not exactly the same, but a similar sort of style, in that they like to create clear-cut chances rather than having pops from 20 yards or a few speculative shots here.
Yeah, that didn't work too well for Liverpool on Sunday, did it?
No, not exactly. I think they had about 20 shots from outside the area. Something ridiculous. But it was a very, very different sort of style of football, in that the chances you do create when they come to you tend to be gilt-edged chances and, you know, clear-cut chances as you define them. I'm sure Opta and people now actually define like clear cut chances rather than just a shot from 20 yards.
Cause they certainly don't Football Manager.
Indeed.
And I mean, Football Manager's real life, so.
Yeah, I may be basing it on that a little bit. No, Opta do that as well.
They do, yeah.
So, it's a different style of football that we've seen, not only in the way you build it up and the way you defend, but also in the way you create chances as well. And, you know, we said Lafondre missed a couple on Tuesday night as well, but they were what you'd call sort of clear-cut chances rather than him getting the ball about 12 yards out with five men in front of him just having a pop.
Mm.
But at the same time, on Tuesday night, there did seem to be a bit more directness and a bit more willing to have a go and actually, you know, put your foot through it and have a go on goal. And I think we saw that up at Doncaster as well, like yeah. Certainly towards the end of the second half when we were having a few more chances.
Well, absolutely. Just before we move on to Doncaster, all I can say is about that Borough game is that the work rate was so impressive, and it is exactly what we've been used to and spoiled with from Reading teams over the last decade. They were hustling, they were bustling, they were everywhere. And you were discussing some of the player ratings and, you know, and Chris Gunter. And I know Chris Gunter didn't have a fantastic game. He made a diabolical back pass and they led to a goal.
Mm.
And his crossing wasn't brilliant. But what I loved about Gunter is, and he summed up a lot of the team, is he was tracking back, he was pushing the wingers up. He was all over them.
Mm.
And Reading forced teams into mistakes. And that's what they have been doing over the years. And that's when they've been their most successful. And it's great to see that work rate back after a couple of really lacklustre away performances.
And the fullbacks are so important for us. I mean, Obita provided the cross for the first goal. Chris Gunter provided a cross for Lafondre, which was the one that went straight at the keeper. It's all right to have overlapping fullbacks and overlapping wingbacks and supporting and getting overloads on the wings, but you've got to do your defensive duty as well. And I can't even think of the amount of times where Jordan Obita has legged it up the field to try and put a cross in and then legged it straight back because, you know, he's adapted so well to his left back role, and, you know, we'll come on to accolades later in the season. But you know, for a winger, for a not a natural left back, to still have his mind on the game and think, right, my job's not done here, I need to get back. And same for Chris Gunter as well. I mean, you know, for whatever he may lack in sort of calmness in possession, his work rate and his energy just abounds. And yeah, no, the wing-backs are certainly a vital, important play part of the Reading side at the moment.
Yeah, and it's no surprise that they're two of the names being heavily touted for player of the season as well because of that high work rate and energy. Well, for all the positivity, we've just lauded upon the team for that performance against Middlesbrough. For an hour at Doncaster, it didn't look anything like that because Reading went up there and there was no fast start. In fact, Reading didn't really have a decent shot until they scored a penalty because for an hour, Doncaster, while not dominating them, were certainly not looking in any great difficulty.
They were covering them, weren't they?
And surprise, surprise, Billy Sharp doesn't score, but he sets up the goal for James Coppinger. It's 1-0 to Doncaster going into half-time. And at that stage, I sat there thinking, great, Reading have found a new and inventive way to blow their playoff chances. Mm. And the commentary on Berkshire and the report from fans up there and everything you've read and looked at says that Reading were just completely not at the races. And it seems as if it's a half-time team talk from Nigel Adkins, at least that's what's been reported in the press this week, is what helped turn it round.
You know, we said that, we've said it many times on the podcast, that we haven't come from behind to win a game since the first game of the season, or when we've conceded the first goal, we haven't won a game since the start of the season, since Ipswich. And what a time to actually do that, for us to go 1-0 down, and then, with the season on the line, with the season very much on the line, because we wouldn't have been in control of our destiny had we not won that game. But for us to come from behind to win that game, not just 2-1 and be holding on, but then for us to break and get the third goal and put a little bit more gloss on the performance and give you that little bit more confidence. Like that one goal just, you know, can completely change what you feel about it, whether it's an edgy 2-1 win or just about a quite comfortable breakaway 3-1 win.
And as for the goals themselves, obviously Alfie wins himself a penalty and converts. As you know, good to see him scoring a penalty because he missed that one against Yeovil. So it's nice to see him get that confidence back. And now we've got two players that are on good penalty form with him and Pav.
Mm.
And then again, two probably the more unlikely sources of goals you're going to come across this season. For the ultimately what will prove the decisive goal for Pav's first, this just comes from Jake Taylor.
Mm.
Now, I got a joking tweet in from Joe Stevenson in good humour saying, "You guys got it completely wrong. Can't believe you said Jake Taylor never had a future at the club," and he joins Kasper Gorks in that column of players we've said we'll never see them play for end again, and they've popped up.
Yeah.
But, you know, all joking aside, I think we were right to rule out Jake Taylor.
Well, this is the thing, because Nigel Adkins himself had ruled out Jake Taylor.
Yeah, exactly.
And it wasn't like Kasper Skorks, where, you know, he has been rotating his centre-backs and sort of dropping them and bringing in Hector. And you sort of see that as a natural progression, where you bring in Hector to blood the youth and you bring in Morrison because we thought he was possibly the best centre-back at the club. When you've got Jake Taylor there and you've got a central midfield injury crisis, and Nigel Adkins chooses to put Makanoff and Obita in the middle rather than Jake Taylor, you naturally think, well, this is the end for him. It's not us.
And he was completely Alfredo, wasn't he?
It's not us writing him off. It's, you know, it's almost Adkins writing him off and saying,
Who are we to second guess the man himself, Nigel Adkins, because he brings Jake Taylor on.
He's gone away. He's grown a beard.
He has. A fine beard.
A mighty beard.
Only upstaged by Adam Clayton's fantastic effort for Huddersfield.
Yes.
Which, if you haven't seen it, just put Adam Clayton.
That's mighty.
Bearded. Mighty. Fantastic stuff. But anyway, yeah, the bearded Jake Taylor steps up, puts in a fantastic cross of Pog at the back post, and Pog sticks it away. Crowd going absolutely wild. I'm in my living room. I'm going wild. Mm. Thankfully, the house was empty at the time. And, you know, once again, we're set. And then, as you say, the icing on the cake and turn it into 3-1. Alex Pearce marauds forward. Must have been having a nosebleed at the time, because I don't think I've ever seen Pearcey that forward, far forward in open play. Dribbling forward. Little step over.
Oh, well, he didn't really dribble forward. He ran in a straight line. And the Doncaster players just fell around him.
He was holding down L1.
Sorry?
He was holding out R1. Sprint button. Sprint button.
Yeah, yeah. And then press triangle through ball.
Exactly. Well, no, he did some trickery.
Yeah.
I can't do those buttons. It's beyond my capabilities as a 27-year-old. I can't do the skill buttons. Anyway, getting off topic. But he does a step over, lays it off to Poggy. Really nice near post finish as well. Because it's not easy. And, you know, people have been critical of Pog, and we've been critical at times as well. But I think one thing you can't really deny is, when he gets through on goal, 9 times out of 10, he's got a fan. People talk about Lafondre's finishing ability. You look at some of Pav's goals over the years, the header against Chelsea. I remember the goal against West Ham as well, and finishes like that. You know, he's got a really good finish on him. And if he did get a lot more chances, I didn't see any reason why he couldn't be a 20-goal-a-season striker.
Well, I think Pav has got his power. And we talk about perhaps he's more of a player when he's playing up top that likes to hold it up rather than win a few headers. And he's certainly one of these players, a bit in the mould of Roberts, who tries to shield the ball rather than pop
wins
up
fouls.
And win. Yeah, you know, he tries to win fouls rather than winning a header and flicking on. And I think that sort of reflected in his shot power as well, because it was almost so powerful that the keeper never saw it. And you often do see, you know, strikers placing it in the far corner, and sometimes it's just put your boot through it and see what happens. That's exactly what Pav did. And as I said, with that third goal going in, again, it was almost like a pressure moment, a relief moment had been taken off, because it was, we can beat these sides. We don't have to be clinging on for a 2-1 victory in the 90th minute up at the keep moat. It's, actually, we've got the class, we've got the guile, and we've got, almost in that team now, we're starting to refine the pedigree that, you know, that got us to where we are, and that these players have shown in the past, but haven't shown at all times this season.
Yeah, and it's funny because that third goal could prove very crucial as to where Reading finish the season, because, as we alluded to earlier, teams everywhere have continued to help Reading's run along. And, you know, as I said, we sat here before the Easter Monday game, so a lot has gone on. But basically, we now go into every team in our playoff race has got one game left, with the exception of Wigan. So the standings, as it's relevant to Reading anyway, because Leicester and Burnley are up automatically. Derby and QPR have both secured their playoff spots and will finish. Derby will finish third and QPR finish fourth. So they'll both have home legs second in their playoffs. But then, as I said, amazingly, a Reading, who after their 45 games have got 70 points and a goal difference of plus 14. That moves them level on points with Wigan, but one goal ahead. Now, Wigan do have a game in hand. By the time you listen to this podcast, they could well have won that game. Or even if they get a point against Birmingham, they'll move back above Reading.
Is it at Birmingham?
It is at Birmingham.
Well, they're going to win.
Well, you say that, but Birmingham are absolutely desperate for the points because they've dropped into the relegation zone.
They haven't won at home since 2003.
Since Steve Bruce was manager. Yeah. You talk about that, though. When was the last time Blackpool pulled off an away win or a memorable win of any kind? And Blackpool go to the DW Stadium and win 2-0. So the Championship continues to be unpredictable. And as I said, so we're going to level on points with Reading, albeit with a game in hand. Then our main challenger, it's Brighton. Now, they're just a single point behind Reading going into the weekend. They play the same number of games as Reading and they've got exactly the same goal difference. So all Reading have to do is match Brighton's result and they will be in the playoffs.
It's worth pointing out as well, if Reading lose and Brighton draw, then Brighton go in on goal difference. So yeah, we have to win. If we win, we're in. If we draw and Brighton draw or lose, we're in. And if we lose, then we have to hope that Brighton lose as well.
There is a very outside possibility that Blackburn could crash the party. Reading have got a 7-goal advantage over Rovers heading into that final game. So, but if Reading did get, you know, a 3-0 hammering and Blackburn managed to stuff Wigan 4-5-0, then they could slip out. But realistically, Reading have just got to match Brighton's result and they will be in. So. Fingers crossed they can do that.
But it's one of these things. It's you know, as I said earlier with the title race, it's one of these things where obviously you cannot plan these fixtures as they turn out. But this is some amazing planning and some amazing foresight, because Reading are playing Burnley. Burnley are second. Obviously they could have been playing for something now, but they're not. Wigan are playing Blackburn. Wigan will probably need to win or want to win. And Blackburn definitely need to win. And then you've got Brighton, who are playing Forest, who, again, Forest have been sort of flitting around and certainly were up there in the start of
and
the season.
And they'll want to impress Stuart Pearce, hopefully.
Yeah. And, you know, they're all playing for their, or you'd hope that they're all playing for their places next year. So it's one of these where it's not as though Reading, Brighton and Blackburn are all playing sort of dead rubbers and teams that are sort of finishing mid-table. Every team, potentially, is playing for something.
Yeah.
Except Burnley, you'd hope. Because Burnley are booked for second. And,
exactly. Hopefully they're already on the beach, to use the phrase. Although Sean Dyche was on Goals on Sunday this week saying that they were fully focused on the Reading game and were going to give it everything.
Well.
As I saw him on his iPad plotting his holiday. No. in fairness, Sean Dyche is and they did beat a fellow playoff challenger, Ipswich, this weekend, even though they had nothing to play for. So, as I said, that's the race as it stands. Reading will play Burnley on the final day of the season. Wigan go to Blackburn and Brighton have a trip to Forest. And as I said, Reading need to match that result by Brighton and they'll be in the playoffs. They'll finish fifth if Wigan manage to... Well, although they could win one game. It just involves Wigan losing one of their two games. But as I mentioned, they'll be playing Birmingham tonight. So by the time you hear this, it could be academic and they could be 3 points ahead of us. So don't take that one too lightly. But as I said, the key thing is this. We'll be in the playoffs. We better Brighton's result. And on that note, let's move on to some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. Not a lot to report. Obviously, the season's winding down to a close now, so the flurry of news will come after the final whistle of the final game. But meanwhile, I suppose it's a good time to round up some of the ups and downs that could affect Reading going into next season, starting with the Championship. And as we've mentioned, Leicester are champions. Congratulations to them. They'll be able to get up to 102 points. So they can't beat our record. Yay.
We got the record.
We still do, 106. So they're definitely champions. Congratulations to Nigel Pearson's side. Burnley are confirmed in second place and they can't win the title, as I said. So again, congratulations to Sean Dyche's side. And I'm sure Reading, I don't know whether they'll do a Guard of Honour on Saturday.
I think it's the sort of thing you'd do for champions.
Yeah.
But then again, we didn't really do it. We didn't do it for Leicester when they came here.
Yeah, I don't know whether you did it on last season. I don't know. I imagine they did some nice things for Leicester around the stadium, like they put some signs. So.
Apparently second to get a trophy now.
I've seen that.
Really?
Yeah. I remember Reading got some weird little shield when they came second in the...
0-1-0-2, was it?
Yes.
When we drew at Brentford.
Yes. I remember they got... Because I remember we had a testimonial game.
Like you get at the... You know, when you're at youth team level. Yeah. You have the main and the consolation.
The plate.
Yeah, the plate, yeah.
They got the shield. Because I remember we had a testimonial at the end of the season. I want to say it was Parky's testimonial. And I remember them parading it. But anyway. But yeah. Weird. So anyway, so those two are confirmed up. And the playoffs, as we mentioned, Derby and QPR will be in. And then it will be two from Reading, Wigan, Brighton and Blackburn for that final spot for a promotion to the Premier League.
Just on that note, if, you know, this is a discussion we'll have next week as well, but Derby and QPR in third and fourth certainly suits Reading.
Oh, absolutely. They're two teams that haven't beat Reading this season.
Yeah, whereas Wigan, we've got trounced each time. So if we do make it...
If Reading are in, they're avoiding Wigan in the first round.
And the second round.
Fingers crossed.
Indeed. But yeah, no, I think it's quite strange actually to go into the last day of the season and have the top four all cemented for their places. Mm. I mean, you know, obviously I can't go through and look at every single year, but for each team to have sort of a 6-point gap between each.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big gap when you think QPR have got 77 and Leicester have got 99.
Mm.
So that's you know, it's a 7-win difference between two sides. So Leicester are very deserving of the title this year. You know, only 6 defeats all season, and you know, a couple of those, or at least one of those, has come after they've been secured champions anyway. So I say full credit to them, and they'll be joined by one of those Burnley plus one of those six sides even. Right, but at the other end of the table, I'm really sad to say, and I genuinely mean this, I'm really sorry to see Yeovil go. They fought on bravely, and so they've probably got the smallest budget in this division. I've said it many times, I loved my experience going on to Huish Park. Whatever it was, I enjoyed going there this season. I thought it was a fantastic away day, very friendly, a stadium with genuine character, nice to see terraces in the Championship, albeit however briefly. And they went about the games the right way. They did create chances. They'll probably feel a little bit aggrieved they didn't get more points out of Reading, to be honest, because they definitely should have got something in the away game. And in the home game, I know they did cling on to a point. But until they started getting red cards galore, they were looking, you know, like they might well take all three. And that could have made the difference for them. But no, as I said, Yeovil are down. They've been joined by Danny Wilson's Barnsley, Thomas Sifka, sadly leaving the division. They've got 39 points, so they're 5 points adrift with a game to go and can't survive. So those two are definitely down. Sad to see Barnsley go. I've got to be honest, I'm not really.
Well, I think Barnsley is sort of one of those sides. They were, what, Premier
League? We gave them 4 points this season. We couldn't have done any more for them.
We gave a lot of teams a lot of points that we shouldn't have given them, Dan.
We've skewed the relegation picture completely.
Barnsley are one of those weird sides that I remember sort of collecting the Panini in 96-97, and Barnsley were a Premier League team. And
John Hendry.
Yeah, all these sorts of players. And, you know, Pierre Van Hooijdonk, did he play for Barnsley? No,
Forest. No, he played Forest.
But yeah, no, they were sort of one of those teams that I've always remembered historically being a big club, or had that at the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're sort of flitting between the divisions now. No, Barnsley, Oakwell, traditional enough stadium.
Yeah, I said it's just...
There are teams I prefer to see go down than them.
Yeah, well, I said, goodbye to Barnsley. I'm not going to miss you too much. This is a bit of a trek. Indeed. And they will be joined now by one of, looking at it very quickly, it's going to be one of 5 teams, because the race at the bottom is very fluid. And again, this is going to be greatly affected by 2 games tonight, because Charlton are playing Watford as well. But as we go into 2 games to go, Burnley are on 43 points. Doncaster are one place above, so Burnley are in relegation zone on 43 points. 1 point above them are Doncaster. 1 point above them are Millwall. As on the same points are Charlton, and then Blackpool are on 46 points, up in 18th. So it's going to be one of those 5 teams to go. And the permutations, as I said, are going to be completely affected by how Charlton and Birmingham get on. So I'm not even going to start. But out of those 5 teams, which of them would you pick to go? If you had your choice.
If we're in... it's a very difficult one. If we're in the same division next year, I wouldn't particularly... it's really difficult. I mean, I could make a case for each of them, in that Charlton and Millwall, I'd quite like to stay up because they're sort of London sides, so that's a nice trip. But then again, you know, they're not the best sides. Blackpool, again, that's a nice trip, and got a bit of a soft spot for them, mainly Football Manager related. Donny, you know, they're a League One, or they were a League One last year, and it's not that nice to see teams come up and then go straight back down. I mean, that sort of points you to how well Bournemouth have done this season, when you think that Yeovil have gone down already, Doncaster are 21st, and then Bournemouth up in 9th.
You had to really feel sorry for Doncaster the weekend, because, as I said, up to the 60th minute, you know, they were thinking, oh, we're on 47 points. Obviously, Blackpool were looking like the team in absolute freefall, not going anywhere. And they would have been, you know, pretty much set. In fact, I think they would have been safe had Blackpool lost and they'd won, or there or thereabouts, something near enough. But as it turned out, you know, Blackpool go and pull off that shock win at Wigan, and Reading go and rattle in 3 goals in half an hour, and suddenly they're right in the thick of it. And if Birmingham do get anything out of tonight's game, it'll be Doncaster on the hot seat going into the final game. So
I think Birmingham, one of those sides that we've historically sort of had a few games against them recently. Sort of, they've been one of those that have vaguely followed our, you know, divisional trek, and they're, you know, they've been affected by financial constraints. So, you know, it's another one of those sides that if they get relegated. I mean, who
I was going to say about Birmingham, you know, people might laugh how Birmingham have fallen from grace, but I mean, does this story sound familiar? Foreign owner comes in promising bright new things. They win promotion, have a season in the Premier League. Looking good. All goes wrong. Don't get any investment, but still make the playoffs the following season. And then the bottom fell out. Sound like a team, you know?
Let's not go there.
Let's not go there. Anyway, so it is going to be one of those five teams. And I don't know, for my money, Doncaster have to go to Leicester on the final day of the season.
Yeah.
So if Birmingham get anything out of their last two games, it looks like Donny are probably going to be ones to drop through the trapdoor. But as you point out, Birmingham are in free fall still. They have picked up, they have beaten Doncaster and Millwall in recent, sort of in the last couple of months, but that's about it really. And they go to Bolton on the final day, who are in a really good run of form as well, Bolton. They've really turned their season around and are looking strong to make a push next season. So can they get a point out of those two games?
I should think they can. I mean, you know, Wigan...
Well, I hope they get all three against Wigan.
Yeah, no, well, Wigan are one of those sides who, as we said, you know, they were booked for the playoffs or possibly even higher a couple of months ago when they were storming up with UA Rosler. And then it's almost as if... It's almost like we said in that FA Cup run and the inevitable disappointment of going so far and not getting... I was about to say not getting to Wembley, but you do get to Wembley.
Yeah.
Not getting to the final at Wembley by a meaningful contest. It can take you out. Can take it out of you both mentally and physically. And you know, Birmingham's last point at home was against Burnley of all teams. So you know, anything is possible, as demonstrated by Blackpool at Wigan.
Exactly. So it'd be very interesting to see who makes the drop out of those teams. As for coming up, we're going to be possible. Again, I'm saying this as if we're not going to get through the playoffs, but should we stay in the Championship? Next season, we'll have a trip to Griffin Park to look forward to.
Lovely.
For the first time since that memorable day when Jamie Cureton sent us up.
Good memories.
Congratulations to Brentford, they've managed to go up. Uwe Rosler having a hand in possibly two promotions this season. And obviously the team that's won the league is Wolves, who have managed to bounce back from back-to-back relegations by coming up at the first attempt under Kenny Jackett.
He left Millwall to go down a division, didn't he?
He did. He did indeed. And they've stormed the division. I think they're going to set a points record. I think they can get up to, I want to say, 103.
Okay. As long as they can't get ours.
No, ours good. Is safe across the Football League.
So, I mean, you know, we did say that, you know, Leicester had a chance of getting it and then slowly the points dwindled down. And it is so easy for teams to just lose focus.
You have such a small margin for error to get that 106-point margin. You know, if you consider it, that across the entire season you can get, what, 96?
138.
Something along those lines. I can't do the maths in my head and talk at the same time.
130.
I'm going to trust you, Johnny.
Yeah.
You've got a trustful face. But yeah, if you think about that, so you can drop, what, 32 points across the season. That's, you know, 10 defeats or, you know, a combination of defeats and draws.
Yeah.
Exactly. So small margin for error for those teams, and Reading's record safe. And, you know, people are saying it's going to be a long time before it gets beat, and I can't disagree with that. But anyway, yeah, Brentford and Wolves are going up. And one of the teams that will be joining them is going to be one from Preston, Leyton Orient, Rotherham and Peterborough. I've got to say, I'd like to see either Preston, Orient or Rotherham, just because I've had enough of Peterborough beating us in recent years.
Yeah, no, Peterborough are a bogey team. I mean, were they the team that sort of took us off our record in the 2005-06, I think? They were one of the only...
That was Plymouth.
That was Plymouth, was it?
Plymouth and Luton, two teams who were, again... Both in League Two, or Luton will be in League Two, having won promotion.
Yeah. I mean, Rotherham, they must have been in League Two.
Well, I remember Rotherham, obviously, pipping us to promotion. The season we got to Cardiff, under Ronnie Moore. Their rapid ascent, so they did very well. Preston, you know, David Moyes, obviously managed them to a playoff final.
I was mascot back in 1999, and the team we played was Preston. We won 2-1. Had my picture taken with Grant Brebner.
Very nice.
So, yeah, no, I'd like to see Preston. Again, another northern trip.
I suppose I'd like to see Orient, just for a bit of a novel factor. I don't think we played Orient too many times in recent years.
No, they're one
I
of
want
those.
To say our paths might have crossed at Medeski in the early years, but I can't remember games anyway.
Yeah, and no, I think we may, you know, possibly in the old Division 2, maybe around 99, 2000.
Yeah, we've certainly played them before, but... So that's, you know, it'd be one of those four teams. So, anyway, even if it is Portsmouth, Peterborough, that's the team I mean.
Posh,
make it up. They'll be a good to see them in division again.
Yeah.
Anyway, no obvious topic for pub chat this week. A few ideas floating around, but we're going to save those. So if you'd like to talk about proper meaty pub chat discussion when Westy comes back. So for the meantime, we're going to let you suggest the topics and provide your questions in the tweets and emails.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, welcome back. Tweets and emails time. Thank you very much, those of you who have taken the time to get in touch with us. You just heard the stings there, but if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/thetarlhurstend, and you can get us on Twitter at thetarlhurstend. Please use the hashtag TTE podcast. That's the best way to get to us. If you use that hashtag, I'll know that you want to get in touch with the show, and I can just click on it easily and I can find all of your tweets. Whereas if you chip in with a thought earlier in the week, sometimes I can miss it because it does literally just involve me going back and looking through. And I'm not moaning, but we do get a lot of tweets at us. And thank you to all those, even if you're not popular. Meaning for the show. Yeah. It's always nice to be popular. Even if you're just slagging us off and saying we've got things wrong, we appreciate it. So keep the feedback coming in.
Pointing out our constant errors, re-gawks, re...
Not very hard to do.
How many bandwagons... Can someone go through and say how many bandwagons we've got on and then jumped off and then jumped back on and then jumped off and on again?
It's our fitness campaign.
Yeah. If we could possibly get some sort of a gif of us jumping onto and off.
Take one bandwagon, I'm completely off before we get into it. Royston Drenthe. Absolutely 100% off the Royston Drenthe bandwagon.
Yeah.
Apparently he's injured, he's got a hamstring injury again, but you know, how many times has this man been injured? Or, you know, obviously it's not nice, and I know he had personal problems over Christmas, and you know, hopefully that was nothing too serious, and it's never nice, you know, whatever reason. But regardless of the reasons for his absence, he's been missing and he's never had a chance to get going, and when he has been here, he's been given chances, he's not delivered, and it's very hard to see him. Listen to this bold prophecy. It's very hard to see him play for Reading again. Him starting against Burnley or something.
Yeah, preparing the music already. I think we've seen he's one of those players that you almost have to carry in a game. You know, it sounds sort of a bit spiteful, but it'll give you his 5 or 10 minutes of sprinting around and making an effort. And then, you know, for whatever reason, his concentration or his desire, his enthusiasm just drops off.
The damning stat is this. He's got fewer goals this season than Kasper Gorks. He's got fewer goals than Massar managed in his Reading tenure. And he's only got one more goal than Stephen Kelly.
Has he got less goals than own goals? We've had a good few. We've had, one with Yeovil, one last week.
Yeah.
Could probably think of another one along the line somewhere.
But as I said, regardless, his goal tally's been ridiculous. 2 goals all season. They came 2 in 2 games. Mm. His assists have probably been less than 5. He's put in a couple of good free kicks, but... I'm sorry, Royston, and if you're listening, prove me wrong, but it's been a waste of money. I'm just saying it. Absolute waste of money. And
this is the thing, you know, we've seen...
He's got 3-year contract. That's the worrying thing.
But we've seen him, you know, he didn't get many games, sort of start of the season, middle of the season, and then...
Well, he did. He was up there, if you remember, and to be fair to him, he was one of our decent performers.
Yeah, but... no, I meant middle of the season when he did get dropped and was outside, and then he came back February, March. In my opinion, he should have won our Player of the Month poll for March. Because
he did have very good games at Leeds and Brighton.
Well, he won 3 man of the matches, and I think it was one of those things where Jordan Abita has obviously been coming in for a lot of praise. We're sort of moving on to pub chat, aren't we?
We're moving on to AOB.
This could be our encompassing pub chat. Anyway, I thought Drenthe should have won Player of the Month for March because he scored 2 goals, he won 3 man of the matches. It's just Jordan Abita carried it on into April, if you like.
Yeah, and that's partly our fault because the poll does go up slightly late.
All on me.
Yeah, blame this dude. Anyway, we'll round up the Player of the Month results a bit later on in the other business, but we should move on to the tweets and emails because you guys have been, guys and girls have been very nice in sending them all in to us. And as I said, we, you know, genuinely mean it. It is run this show for you guys, so any questions and tweets you have, even if you think, oh, that sounds silly or they've covered that before, please send them in and we'll do our very best to read out each and everything we receive. So, and the only thing is, if we do happen to miss it, apologies for that. Right, let's move on. Jordan Cuttle says, if Williams is fit, basically, I should preface this by saying, I put out a tweet saying, would you keep the same team or would you change it? So these are a few responses to that. Jordan Cottle says, if Williams is fit, we've got to play him. Game winner on his day. Can't say the same for Ledger Akpan, despite them playing well. John Hyde says, bring back Williams if fit, with legs and centre, alongside Ledgerwood in centre midfield. I think Adkins made some calculated risk playing semi-fit players against Borough, knowing that Donny would be a bit easier, and so he could rest players before Burnley, which is the hardest match, unless they're on the beach. Let's hope so. Evan Collins says, I'd bring back Danny Williams if fit, probably for Akpan, otherwise unchanged starting 11. While Seelef Gudjonsson, who is Raw Hoops' his latest name. I don't know what Raw Hoops has done there.
Interesting.
Says, Jake Taylor deserves to start after his cameo gave us such a boost. And Joey Davey says, Williams for legs of wood. And George Williamson, Taylor in, and Williams if fit. So a lot of different choices. Most people seem to want to bring Danny Williams back. Do you agree?
I do, because Danny Williams is certainly going to be up there in my player of the season, in that he's made such a big impact, and he's one of the few players that I would be happy to see around next year, which is sort of damning for most of the team, but I think he's one of the players who you almost want to build the team around. He's in the middle of the park, he's always buzzing around and, you know, making sure that he's guarding the defence but also getting forward. He's certainly shown his class, and I think looking forward, Williams and Karachan could be a very dynamic duo in the middle. I mean, it's interesting what John there said about resting players against Borough. I mean, I heard, I think it was in Atkins' post-match, that Pog wasn't actually fully fit, and that's why he dropped him. And ideally, he didn't want to play him against Borough. But then, obviously, when Hal Robson-Kanu got whacked in the face and possibly had a broken nose, he had to bring Pogrebniak on. And I think it's a credit to Atkins and to the players that even with these injuries going on at the moment and all the injuries we've had throughout the season, we're grinding out results when it's important. In terms of whether I play Williams, I'll definitely play Williams next week, but it's going to be harsh on someone. I'd say you'd probably play him with Ledgerwood. Ledgerwood's got a little bit more experience.
Yeah, we didn't really mention Ledgerwood when we did our roundup of the Doncaster game. Obviously, he was a bit of a villain on last week's show after getting that red card against Leicester. But, you know, credit to him. He came into the Donny game and he played well. He didn't have his brilliant game. There were a couple of vintage sort of Ledge moments where he sort of nicked the ball and broke up play.
I mean, how many games have we seen? I mean, you look at Sean Morrison. He had a shocking game first game back, but he slowly growing into it, kept a clean sheet against Borough, only conceded one against Doncaster. The defence played okay there. It's the sort of thing where, especially after a year out, you're going to need time, because you can train all you want, you can play nice little three-on-threes on the training ground as much as you want, but nothing beats going up to Doncaster in the Keep Moat Stadium, tight little stadium like that, and you're going to get a few kicks, and the pace of the game is going to be totally different to anything you've seen for a year. I think Ledgerwood's got the experience. I mean, obviously he's not the first choice, but I think Ledgerwood is definitely a better option to partner Williams, because it's almost the most similar thing we have to Ledgerwood Karachan.
Exactly, yeah.
Where Ledgerwood will do the donkey work, put in his foot, and Williams will run around like a terrier. That's what I do for next week anyway.
Yeah, I don't think I can disagree with you there. Obviously, it depends how Ledgerwood's feeling fitness-wise, yes. But if he is up for it. Sadly, it doesn't look like there's going to be any Danny Guthrie. He obviously came off clutching the hamstring that they'd worked so hard to get him back for. He came back ahead of schedule, really. There were talk that he'd been having sort of treatment day in, day out, just to get him ready for the run-in, but it doesn't look like it's paid off. No word from the club yet, and we'll talk to Charles on the podcast extra on Friday just to get a full up injury update, but it doesn't look like he'll be involved. Maybe they might be able to get him fit for a playoff final or something.
But going into the playoff final, it's not the sort of game where you want to...
No.
Assuming you get to a playoff final, it's not the sort of game where you want to, you know, drop a midfielder like Kopac Pan, who might have played a blinder throughout two games, and say, actually, mate, you're out.
But Guthrie's you would like in. To have a player like Danny Guthrie available on your bench,
yes.
Wouldn't you? Because if he needed to change a game, he is one of the few Reading midfielders that does something different. So,
I mean, with Guthrie on that Tuesday night against Middlesbrough, you could almost see after about half an hour, it's like someone shot him. Whether he was out of energy or whether he
slamming the ground,
move.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
His passing, I mean, he played a couple of typical Guthrie passes, nice little flicks around the corner, a couple of nice through balls. But then, just after that, whether it was his confidence, his energy, or just his ability, it just went. And he came out for the second half and sat down after 30 seconds and said, sorry.
You could tell the frustration. He obviously felt something, so unfortunate. And just rounding off these tweets saying on the selection issues, Daniel Curtis says, the centre of midfield is why Reading are 1-0 down at half time at Donny. Ledge is nowhere near match fit, and Akpan needs a fully fit experienced partner next to him midfield. So if Williams is available, he has to start. So that's a vote for Akpan Williams. And Ollie Reid says, I actually think Ledge and Williams would be an awesome partnership at this level. Thoughts? Joe Stevenson continues that theme as well, saying he'd like to see Williams and Ledge together. Williams has been our most impressive player this season, has to play.
Yeah, no, I think there are a couple of doubts about Ledger Wood's sort of match fitness, but if he retains the ability that he had 2 years ago, I mean, you have to say he was never the most mobile. He runs in quite a languid style. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. But it sort of does match that Ledger Wood Karachan mould that we had, where Ledger Wood was sitting deep and breaking up play, and Karachan was harrying the man on the ball. And I think Williams possibly has a little bit more in terms of footballing ability than Karachan, but he doesn't quite have the energy and the zip of Karachan. But it's certainly a combination that would be interesting, possibly with a third midfielder in there like Guthrie.
Yeah.
And I think possibly next year, looking forward, whichever division we're in, I'd like to see a midfield three of Guthrie, Williams and Karachan, because I think then you would have enough defensively but also enough attacking in order to create chances but also break them up and, you know, be solid in the midfield. Because I think Guthrie isn't the best defensive player and he needs almost two behind him to have that capability.
We've said before, haven't we, and I've certainly made no secret of my belief, that I think he very much suits a five-man midfield and just isn't quite there for a four. He does a good job and he's had good games in a four, but it's very easy to isolate him. Mm. And teams did figure that out, didn't they, very quickly, as in the sort of lead-up to Christmas when the form all started going wrong. And they realised that, oh, in a four-man midfield, we'll just stick two men. If we've got a five-man midfield, stick two men on Guthrie, take him out of the game. Brendan have got big areas and they can expose it. So
I think with Taylor,
quickly,
that was
fine.
Throwing him in against Burnley wouldn't be the best because he hasn't started for Reading this season. He's got about an hour against Millwall. We've obviously got half an hour at Doncaster. Throwing him in to a starting lineup against Burnley, in my opinion, would not be the best, especially when arguably this is the best, or we've got three of the best midfielders finally fit in Ledger Woods. Williams and, well, if Williams makes it, and Akpan. I think throwing Taylor in right now, especially against Burnley, who, let's be honest, score goals for fun, probably wouldn't be the best
player. Yeah, you leave him on the bench and hope that, you know, he can repeat that sort of cameo again.
So. Yeah, you know, he's been a hero for us once. There's no saying he can't do it again off the bench.
Yeah, exactly. So fingers crossed that if needed, he can step up to the plate again. Yeah. So that just about rounds up the midfield debate. A couple of other tweets we've had this week in, just on more sort of general issues. Box Royal, one of our assistant editors at the website, says, could McCarthy and or Federici leaving in the summer open the door for Mikel Anderson next season?
I think
opens the door as he's under contract.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mikel Anderson, he's sort of got experience at League One level. I mean, he's out in Denmark at the moment.
Yeah, struggling to get the Randers side.
Yeah, but, you know, it's always difficult when you compare the Danish Superliga to the English Championship and what sort of levels they're at. I mean, we've always been blessed with good goalkeepers, and I think it would almost be a culture shock if you went into the start of a season with a Reading side where the goalkeeper wasn't the strongest position.
Hmm.
Because you think through Hahnemann, through Federici, through McCarthy, it's been a position we've been very blessed in the last few years. There's nothing wrong with Mikel Anderson. There's nothing wrong with Federici. There's nothing wrong with Stuart Taylor. I think if we'd had to start Stuart Taylor all this season, we probably wouldn't be complaining that much because Stuart Taylor clearly must show something.
He's won a Premier League. He's won two, I think.
Well, has he?
He actually got a medal for Arsenal.
Okay. Did he play that many games or was it just...
I think he did. I think that was a rotating keeper situation.
Oh, fair enough. I wouldn't be that concerned if Mikel Anderson came in. As I said, I'm sure that he's an adequate sort of championship level goalkeeper. Clearly, Sal Bebo does his work right and, you know, gets these goalkeepers up to a very high standard, or we've just been very lucky.
Now, obviously I haven't seen too much of Anderson, but from what I have seen, I remember watching him in under-21s of Denmark play quite well.
I've seen him down at Pompey. He had a couple of good games down there as well.
And again, like you said, it's not a big issue. And that's the nice thing about Reading, is that even if you lost two players of the calibre of Federici and McCarthy, you've got the likes of Mikel Anderson. You could possibly re-sign Taylor. And you've also got young John Henley as well, who's gone and... I noticed that Drax Hippolyte was on... there's going to be Australia Berkshire in recent weeks saying what a difference John Henley's made to their... Basically, he's come into the team and helped them get away from the relegation zone. Okay, it's Conference South level, but, you know, he's got... You know, you've got to start somewhere. So, Reading have got another good crop of young goalkeepers. Obviously, we've seen in the youth teams, like Stuart Moore and Dan Lincoln as well. Yeah. So... I think, you know, it's the one position that if Reading lose, even if they lose two quote unquote first teamers are not worried at all. So it'd be nice to see him get a chance. He's been at the club forever. He really has been. Mikkel Hansen's been here for a long time.
I mean, he's what's been 24, 25 now?
Yeah, and he was backing up, he was on the bench backing up, you know, Marcus Hanneman. Well, as that says it all when Marcus Hanneman was here. So he's certainly been very patient, and you know, I would not begrudge him a chance at all, whether it's here or anywhere else. One from Mark Mayo, another one of our assistant editors, says, perhaps a topic for pub chat. What players' names have you had on the back of shirts over the years? I've had Lita, Matiowski and Sonko. And the reason I didn't pick this for pub chat is because I've never had a player's name on the back of my shirt. And West isn't here. And so I don't know how many you've had. Have you had a player's name on the back of your shirt?
This year I've got Williams, because Williams is my surname. And Williams wears 23. And it was my 20. It was a birthday present from my girlfriend for my 23rd birthday. So it was one of those things where it was almost just perfect. I've had Matiowski. I had Mattia Monse when they were releasing those.
No,
because the Megastore did the £10 shirts with Monse's name on the back.
Oh, brilliant.
So I got Monse Manset 44 on the back, cost me a tenner. Had Curitan back in the day. I'm sure there's been others. I think I had Shane Long for one season, certainly. There's been a lot.
Yeah, we've
I don't get a shirt every year, and certainly don't get my name printed.
Yeah, I've had my name. I have my name. I have Wimb or some version of that on the back of my shirt a couple of times. I've tried to start a bit of a trend for myself of putting a number in based on how many years I've been a Reading fan with last season's shirt. So I think I had 17.
Nice.
On last year's shirt. And if I had bought a shirt this year, it would have been 18. It's not, though, because I'm too tight to buy this year's shirt. I've got to say, I just wait for them to come down to a tenner at the end of the season.
And as ever, we will have the exclusive on what the new Reading shirt looks like on the Tyler Stem podcast.
Yeah, the audio, best audio description in town.
It's blue and white.
Yeah. Whoa, don't give away trade
secrets. Actually, it might not be. Look at Southampton. Theirs is all red now. Might not be blue and white. You heard it here first. It might not be blue and white.
Stop spreading spurious rumours. No, I have liked players over the years. I've just usually, and I said this sounds really tight, but it costs money to get your player's name on the back of your shirt, and depending on lettering and stuff. So I've always thought, even when I have gone for a fairly new shirt, normally I've just gone for the shirt itself. So, but you know, if I had to pick a player now, whose name would I have on the back? Today, maybe I'll go for Pierce.
Problem is, you don't know who's going to be here next year. Yeah. Picking it with one game to go, it's a bit... I mean, you know, I've got Williams, but that's not just because of the circumstances. I think it's because he has been my favourite player this season as well, just in terms of the energy and what he's actually brought to the team. You know, he's made a difference when he's been in the side. I would get a beater, but I think the number 37 is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
Just from a fashion point of view, I mean, come on.
There was an interesting story, wasn't there, a couple of years ago with someone that had bought a Sigurdsson shirt at the start of the season, and obviously we sold him.
Was this when he had the number 44?
No, this was the season he left. Yeah. Someone had paid to get a Sigurdsson put on the back of their shirt, and they complained to the club, and they wanted a refund on the basis of, we thought you would be getting, you know, Sigurdsson would be staying here for the year.
Yeah.
And I think they won their case. Reading settled one of the two.
Yeah.
And they gave him their money back. But what do you think about wearing shirts for players that have left the club?
I think as long as it's sort of a retro shirt, like I've still got my orange monstrosity which says Matiowski on the back. I think that was, well, it was our second Premier League season. But, you know, I mean, unless they're sort of noticeably retro in that it's sort of Pallada or Auto Trader or West Coast, I think... The amount of retro sort of goes back. But then you look at the 05-06 shirt with Kayasira Mita on the front and you think, well, that's a nice retro shirt because it's evokes so many memories.
The peeling of that has completely gone. Mine is like K, C. I think it's about all that's so left. Tell you what, this is rambling now, so we'll wrap this up quickly. Yeah. But do you know what I really hate? When they produce shirts that have got the really flimsy badges... Like, it's not properly sewn in and just the badge starts to peel and it's just really annoying. I think the one when we first came down for the Premier League had that, and it was a really nice shirt as well. I liked that shirt, but the badge basically disintegrated after about 6 months. Anyway, we're rambling about fabrics now, so that is...
Next week, Do you get, and tweet in as well, because I'm intrigued. I've got a mate who gets annoyed at this. Do you get annoyed at players who have a number that doesn't reflect their position on the field? So, for instance, if you have a centre-back with, like, number 2 or a striker with, like, number 6...
Stephen Kelly, a right-back at number 3.
Exactly. Does that annoy you? And do you sort of say, well, he's on the right wing, he can't be wearing number 5 or, you know, that sort of stuff? Tweet us in and give us your most annoying examples of that trend.
We have had another tweet. I'm not just making this up. From Timothy Dustbin, another regular tweeter into the show, who says, seeing as we're in the position of 5th before Wigan play, where would you rather finish, 5th or 6th, Derby or QPR first?
I think I'd rather play...
QPR for me.
I don't care as long as we don't play Wigan.
QPR. I think Derby looks a decent side when they came down.
But I'd rather have the chance with Derby over 2 legs than 1 leg.
Yeah.
I'd be confident of us beating QPR in the
I do wonder, though, if all those old hands at QPR might just rally themselves for one game.
Yeah, possibly. But then, I mean, it's sort of the same situation that we're in that do they know that they're going to be there next year? Because, yeah. I mean, QPR got so many players out on loan, they might just say, oh, we've got the money again now, come back, play for us. Yeah. Julio Cesar, you know, players like that. I mean, I've, as I said earlier in the podcast, as long as we don't play Wigan at any point during this potential playoff run, I don't care. Because Wigan have done the double over us psychologically. That's, you know, that's galling, as well as the fact that it fully showed that they're a better side than us. Whereas we went up to Derby, start of the season, solid 3-1 win. Did the same at QPR, you know, and arguably at home we could have won that game. I think someone got sent off at QPR. But I think I prefer our chances of beating Derby over 2 legs.
And beating
QPR in the final.
Well, yeah, I suppose that'd be the dream. But I think if you're just literally talking about who do you want to play to get to the final, I'm going to say QPR. Also, from a slightly selfish reason, I'd like a fairly local game. That'd be nice.
Yeah, although
even though Loftus Road is a bit of a dump.
Yeah, getting out of Wembley with QPR fans as well could be interesting.
It would be... The sale of blue and white merchandise would be through the roof.
But then again, Derby playing white. Wigan playing blue and white.
The sale of blue and white Jester hats is going to go through the roof. There's a
Don't
stock.
Forget the air horns as well.
Yeah, there's a stock tip for you. So invest in those. And we've had a couple of emails this week, so thanks to...
Old school.
Yeah, people have...
Getting pigeon mail soon.
Yeah, next we'll be getting owls through the through the non-existent chimney at my house.
God, what age are we in that you call emails old school?
I know, it's depressing.
I feel so old.
Yeah, cute, about 20 million people. I wish 20 million people listen to the show. Cue a few dozen people going, oh God, they don't know how they've got it. They've got it. Anyway, Jeff Hallett emails in saying, it's fair to say there's a fair few members of the current squad that we would be delighted to see leaving this summer. Over the years, who have you been dying for the club to sell? Shane Long, before he became decent, and Stephen Hunt come to mind for
Matt
me.
Matt Mills.
You want to see Mills out?
I want to see Mills out, yeah. Andy Hughes. And these are these are two deals as well that I was astounded when we did them. Matt Mills, 5.5 mil. Andy Hughes.
Half a mil to Norwich.
750k, wasn't it? I mean, it was certainly a hell of a lot more than it should have been.
It was a lot.
Who else is there? I mean, you know, there's the infamous sort of 7 we bought in 1998 that were...
I don't think many of them lasted long.
So, yeah, well...
Scott Howie, I think, hung around for a while, but that was about it.
Happy to get rid of them. Haven't been
it's
too...
hard. It's hard.
Because Reading have never particularly signed players.
One for me, Michael Dubry. I just thought, oh, so much hoofball. I know he was solid and, you know, he did his part. Dubs, yeah. But I was just like, oh, God. I was so glad. Oh, and I'll tell you another one. Leroy Leiter.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think over the years, Reading haven't really had those players that are bigger than the club or, you know, have those egos. And I think in a few of the names we've just mentioned, like you mentioned Leroy Leiter, I mentioned Matt Mills, you did have a little bit of that sort of mentality in them. You think back to 2005-06, well, Leiter was in that team, but generally it was, you know, the team is bigger than the individual. And that's what got them so good. And I mean, Andy Hughes is obviously different to that. I think he was just one of those players who, you know, you didn't really take to. But there haven't really been that many players over the years who I've been absolutely dying to see the back of.
No, Reading have done well in the way they recruit players has generally been good. The actual present squad, I've got to say it, Royston Drenthe, just because of his wages, ridiculous.
compared to Watford.
It's the sort of thing where, you know, if we come into the back into this podcast off the back of a loss, we'd be saying, ship the lot of them out. They're all rubbish. They all don't want to wear.
Well, I stick by what I said to on the last show, that there's not really barely a player in that entire squad that I would be heartbroken to see leave the club. And to really feel, because even some of the younger players that I think are fantastic and have got, you know, great potential at the club, I've still not really properly, I don't know, bonded, if that's the right word, with them. Like, even like Sir Jordan Ibita, I've not got so sentimentally attached to them that I'd be gutted to see them go. So there's none of the Gilfie types for me that have been so out of this world and great to watch that I'd be really gutted to see them go. So, I think that just about wraps up. But yeah, let us know who you, over the years, you've been dying to see leave the football club. So it's a weird one. I think depending on the result on Saturday, could see a variety of answers.
Yeah.
If someone scores a hilarious own goal, they could be top of the list. We've got one more email, which will segue us on very nicely into our next section. It's from Jake, who says, obviously two fantastic wins. However, I don't mean to put a downer on things, but Danny Ings is going to have a field day against our centre-backs. We'll have to get extremely lucky to win. And on that note, let's preview that Burnley game as part of Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
Right, so let's answer Jeff's email. Will Danny Ings have a field day against our defenders? Now, Danny Ings, obviously one of the Championship's best strikers. I think he was voted Player of the Year. Obviously in Team of the Year as well, and, you know, been prolific. Thankfully, his partner in crime, Sam Vokes, isn't there. He's sadly injured with cruciate damage, so wish him a speedy recovery. But obviously, he's not going to play on Saturday. So, one of the league's best strikers up against our defence. If Westy was here, I'm sure he'd be pointing out about how our defenders have the turning circles of planets. So, Johnny, this leads into the big question. Are Reading going to do it? Are they going to beat Burnley?
Oh, don't do this to me. What I can tell you is Danny Ings hasn't scored since the 9th of March.
He has been injured a bit.
This is true. And they're also missing Sam Vokes, of course.
So, as I said, yeah.
So, you know, that's their two players who are missing. Kightley's got 3 in the last 3, which is a good return from a winger. I think we're going to do it. I don't believe in fate, but you would have to say that this whole season has almost been fate, in that despite dropping so many points and despite getting so many awful, awful results, we're still there and it's still in our hands.
Is it fate for us to be in there, though, or is it fate for the one final twist to be Reading missing?
This is true. Playoffs? No, I think we're going to... Oh, this is awful. I think we'll draw, and in classic sort of 1998-1999 style, everyone will be waiting for the scoreboard announcer to announce that the final result has come up at Brighton Forest, and eventually we'll erupt around the stadium before we realise we've got to do it in 4 or 5 days' time again.
Oh, what do I think?
What would you prefer? Would you prefer us to win, or would you prefer that little brief bit of elation when you realise that you've not quite done
it? No, I want
to
win.
You want to win?
I want to win.
Okay.
I want to win. I remember the way that the Forest game ended. It was sort of a 8-minute party.
Yeah.
Everyone getting ready to go onto the pitch, and although there was that very scary moment with Piercy clearing off one off the line.
Yeah.
No, I want to see Reading comfortable. I want to see Reading ideally. The ideal situation is for Reading to breeze into a 2-0 lead, possibly, you know, 3-0. And then on the hour mark, take off some of these players that are carrying knocks. Think the job's done. Great. Let's get ready for the next game. The worst thing for my health and sanity is going to be sat there waiting for Reading, or possibly waiting for other results. I don't know if I'll be able to handle that. So no, I want to see Reading go out and win. Will they go out and win? I've been saying all season that I think they're going to miss out on the playoffs. So I'd be, I suppose, hypocritical to turn around now. So my head, my in isolation head says they should win this game and make the playoffs. But as it's me, and I'm going to stick to the pessimist that I am, I'll say that results, whatever way, will contrive to see Reading miss out. In probably hilarious circumstances, like Reading and Brighton are both lose, and then Blackburn do something literally silly, like put 6 past Wigan, just to complete the weirdness of the season.
Yeah, and we're getting on goal difference. I think that would just sum up the season, to be honest, wouldn't it? I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw, and I'm going to go for a lot of sort of
fake cheers around the stadium and eruptions of, oh, there's been a goal at Forest, oh, there's been a goal at Brighton, Blackburn and stuff, and I miss that, you know?
It's not quite as bad as it used to be, though, didn't it? Because he literally used to be some bloke in the stands on his radio. Now everyone's got a smartphone.
Yeah, but you also used to get the fake chants as well. Like, you know, I mean, I'm sure Burnley will be throwing up fake chants and stuff like that as well. So that'll be, you know, quite fun to listen to as well. I've missed that whole situation where you go into the last day.
It is good. It's what you pay your money for, isn't it, for the whole season. You pay for days like this. So you think that Reading are going to do it?
I think we'll draw 1-1 and Brighton will lose at Forest. Thus, we will get into the playoffs.
Okay, I'm just going to abstain from making predictions now.
I'll be honest, like I don't think we'll beat Burnley because they're such a good side. You know, even if they don't have Ings or Vokes, well, they definitely don't have Vokes. It will be quite a low-scoring affair. Burnley generally grind out results. It's certainly in the last few games. I think it will be a 1-1 draw. Burnley will go ahead. We'll equalise.
I have got horrible feelings that I'll once again be sitting there watching a Burnley promotion party while our season's ended, as we saw 5 years ago in that playoff game.
No, that was awful.
But
two wonder goals, though.
Yeah, absolutely. But apart from that game, Reading have actually got a really good record against Burnley. Mm. I think that's about the only game we've lost in the last 10 or 12. So hopefully they can continue that form. And the away game at their place, we lost 2-1, but it wasn't. They didn't dominate us. And that was even during one of our worst periods of the season. So as I said, if I'm being completely honest and using my head here, I think Reading should get the result they need. Mm. But I've given up now. Go listen back to our previous 30 episodes. And I'm sorry, I'm going to admit with this. I could probably get the amount of predictions I've got right on one hand. But I don't think I'm alone. Yeah. And if you have been able to predict this crazy season, please get in touch with me because I would like you to pick my lottery numbers for me. So there we go.
Doing it. And the one good thing is, if Reading get in the playoffs, they'll have momentum, whatever happens.
Exactly.
Because they'll be on a euphoria from either beating Burnley or drawing against Burnley, which isn't a bad result in itself. Burnley are runaway seconds, if you like. Obviously won our last two as well, and you know there are certainly teams in worse form in the division.
Indeed. Right. That just about wraps this up for this show. We've done all the talking, the players done all the talking, 45 games in the books. It's coming down to one game for us to maybe get another two games that might lead to another one game. But basically, it's all on this game. Can Reading do it? Fingers crossed. We're going to have a fair bit of build-up on the website. We'll also get the Burnley view on things and we'll make our predictions. But needless to say, if you haven't got a ticket and there's still one available, get yourself down to the Medeski. To be cliche, back the boys and make some noise. It will make a difference because Burnley are obviously going to be making quite a racket and having a party. Mm. And Reading fans, even if you've been slagging off Joby McEnough all season, get behind him for this game. Sing his name because it can make a difference.
You know what I'd love? Hope Akpan scores the 93rd minute winner to get us into the playoffs.
I would love Alex McCarthy to score the 93rd minute winner.
That would be quite something.
It would really be awesome. you can imagine it though, can't you? Results, words come through. We need a goal.
Federici scored one before. Yes. Do we bring him on in the 92nd minute?
Absolutely.
when we've got a corner?
He's probably about our third choice striker right now.
He's better in the air, that's what I reckon.
Yeah, he's probably only behind Nick Blackman in our striker range. Right, anyway.
Reading cynicism.
Indeed. Right, that about wraps up this week's show. I'll be sitting down with Charles on Friday to get the very latest on the injury news for the likes of Harry Robson-Kanu and Danny Guthrie and Danny Williams, see whether they'll be fit for the Burnley game. But that's it from me and Johnny. As for the future of this show and what's coming next, well, that's greatly going to depend on what happens on Saturday. If Reading get into the playoffs, then it'll mean a bit of a tight turnaround. And I don't know, we haven't worked out work schedules or anything like that, so... Again, stay tuned to the Twitter for when we'll be recording. If we miss the playoffs, I'm going to hazard a guess to say that we might do a bit of a wrap-up show next week. Mm. Or we might have a breather week to fully let the dust settle on the season. But either way, stay tuned on Friday for the Podcast Extra. And stay tuned to the Twitter feed at the Tarlest End for news on the next show. On that note as well, please obviously check the website, thetarlestend.com, for plenty more. Debate and analysis. And if you haven't by now, get yourself an account and start making some comments or a fan post. I said it's a fan website, just as this is a fan show. The whole reason we set up the whole thing was to give fans a voice and a place to talk about the club. So it's there for you. And any questions, emails, or feedback you got for us, you know the addresses by now. You know where to get in touch, so please do. So from us, it's goodbye and everything crossed.
You are.
It's my house.